All right. The Nick DeGilio Show continues here on a Monday morning, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time and it's on Monday. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And we want to talk to Steve Procopi and Eric Childress, who are both at the Sundance Film Festival. So let's say hello to Eric. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
And Steve. Hello, Steve.
Hey there.
All right. So how's it going, Eric? How's the weather?
It was snowing tonight. All of a sudden, we got a lot of big, kind of a big snowstorm happening right now. But for the most part, the weather's been pretty decent, kind of held up.
Mm-hmm. Now, Steve, are you guys staying in the same place?
Oh, yeah. Now, we got a group of Chicago guys here in the same condo. So.
Okay, cool. How long you been there? How long you been there, Steve?
Since Thursday.
Okay, since Thursday. Eric, same with you?
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so
we all came in on the same flight and everything. So, okay. Yeah.
All right. So, how many movies have you seen?
Since In Town, whereas the Sundays or in the Monday, so I've seen 17 movies.
Oh my God! All right. What about you, Steve?
I haven't counted, but it's probably around that. Yeah, it's probably pretty close to that, actually. I guess.
All right. Let's start off. I got a list here of some of the stuff that you guys have seen. Okay, I am so excited about Happy Happy Joy Joy.
Yeah.
The Ren and Stimpy story. I love Ren and Stimpy, and I'm so excited for this. This is a documentary about Ren and Stimpy. Let's start with you, Eric. What'd you think?
Yeah, I think it's really good, actually. I mean, it's a documentary that charts the entire history of Ren and Stimpy. It's, you know, its beginnings and, you know, where it eventually kind of went off the rails. And it's a very candid documentary, because they do have, they've interviewed just about all of the people who were there, producers, programming people at Nickelodeon, all the people who worked on the show, who left and came back and all these kind of things. And most importantly, they have John Kricfalusi on camera. And if you followed the Kricfalusi story over the last couple of years, you know that it takes a particularly dark turn from just a couple of years ago. And that's a subject matter that is addressed in the film. I think you might say maybe a little too late in the proceedings to really give it a full kind of stretch. But the stuff that they talk about with Ren and Stimpy why that cartoon was so revolutionary and some of the things that they got away with on that show, the same things that they snuck past the Nickelodeon sensors and radar, and ultimately, you know, where some of the influences for the characters came from, is pretty extraordinary. Kirk Douglas being one of them, as far as Ren is concerned, and just all kind of manifesting from Kricfalusi's own personality and demons. So it's a pretty thorough documentary and one that you're very much going to enjoy.
Okay, Steve, what do you think?
Yeah, it takes a really sharp, dark turn in the last third, and it should. And it almost, to some degree, it's a little too long to get there. But at the same time, like, it's not just about these accusations about him and, like, underage girls. It's about, like, when he became kind of a monster as he got really popular working with Nickelodeon. He just, you know, and this.
Steve, we're having a kind of a screwy connection. Hang on a second. Let me.
Okay, sure.
Hold on a second. We're starting to lose. Steve was kind of fading out there. But is it now, Eric? While we're getting Steve all ready to go.
Yeah.
Is this getting like a regular release?
I don't think it has distribution yet. There haven't really been any kind of major deals to announce here at Sundance. There was one that just came through the over the news recently, but there's nothing been set yet for this one. There are a couple of other films that are going to be premiering on cable that we're aware of, including another documentary we're going to talk about actually. But this one, it doesn't have distribution yet, but I can't imagine that someone's not going to pick up on this.
Okay, all right, Steve, continue what you thought of the movie.
I was just saying that it's fascinating to watch how the workplace environment evaporated too. I mean, he was a rebel. He was kind of a rock star. He leaned into that image a lot, and he he just got so careless that Nickelodeon couldn't work with him anymore. And it's, you know, as much as I love that show to death, and there's one guy in the who talks about the influence of that show and says the list of shows that Ren and Stimpy influenced is every show.
Oh, yeah.
And that's like, that's a great, I mean, not just animated either. So it permeated everything that kind of came after it. And, but no, it's a terrific documentary. That's just, yeah, that ending. And the weirdest thing is I don't think John Kay really quite gets that he did something wrong. I mean, he does and he doesn't. So, and that's a little nerve wracking too, to be honest. So if you're prepared for the creep vibe, then you'll love this movie.
Okay. All right. I can't wait to see it. I mean, I love Ren and Stimpy. Yeah. I've had Chris Faluci on the show a couple of times. And a weird dude.
Yep.
So, all right. Steve, why don't you tell us, where do you want to go next?
Why don't we talk about something that's coming out fairly soon, The Assistant. This is in a roundabout but really clever way. This is basically the first film to come out that deals with the day-to-day goings-on in it's sort of a generic office environment, like a movie producer environment, where there is a lot of deals going on, a lot of scripts coming in, a lot of lunches being had, and a lot of beautiful girls going in and out of the office of the guy that runs the company. And it's all sort of seen through the eyes of this assistant that sits right outside the guy's door. We never actually lay eyes on the guy, or he's never given a name. We barely even hear his voice. But it's the actress of Julia Garner, right, Eric? That's her name?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, so, and who's just fantastic in so many things. But she has very little dialogue, but the times when she does speak, it's really powerful. And there's a scene where she goes to the HR director of the company, and it is one of the most unsettling things I think I'm going to see this year, and the way she is treated then by him. And it's a great way of capturing these small indignities in an office environment like this, and how everyone just kind of goes along with it for obvious reasons sometimes, because it's, if they play the game, they move up in the world. Like, they move up in a movie world, which is where they want to be. So, but it is hard-hitting. It's really short. It's really quick. And Julia Garner's amazing in it.
Okay. What do you think, Eric?
Yeah, I can echo a lot of that, particularly Julie Garner's performance. I mean, this movie, in so many ways, is almost like a silent movie a lot of the times. It's us observing and almost becoming complicit in the kind of goings-on in this office setting. It's a really clever way of presenting this story that, you know, we all have been hearing so much about over the last couple of years, without sensationalizing it. And so it really kind of gets to the root of what it's like to be a woman, particularly a young woman who's just looking to make her way in the world, and be a part of this silence that has to go on, and how she is forced to react to this male-dominated world where literally she has no voice. So yeah, it's a really strong piece of work.
Okay. It's Nick DiGilio Show continuing here on 720 WGN, and we're talking with Eric Childress and Steve Procopi, who are at the Sundance Film Festival giving us exclusive reviews of some of the stuff that that they're seeing at the festival. All right, 312-981-7200 as we continue. All right, Eric, where do you want to go next?
I want to talk about a film that I think is probably my favorite of the fest so far, and it's a film called Worth. And it stars, it's a great cast, but it stars Michael Keaton. I think his name is Ken Feinberg, who basically sort of took the job, campaigned for the job of being the guy who would basically chart out how the 9/11 victims responders bill or compensation bill was going to be distributed amongst all the families that lost people, from the airlines to the World Trade Center, and how over this 2-year period, this all had to be sort of reconciled. You know, exactly, the movie asked the question, what is human life worth? And, you know, as we see lawyers dictate this stuff, you know, through and through, when you're dealing with grieved families who are still grieving in the aftermath of this you know, obviously this horrific tragedy, and then seeing corporations try to milk every possible cent out of this for the higher up people who were, you know, had higher paying jobs than some of the people who were just on the planes, and you see the manifestations of this over this 2-year period. It's a really gripping procedural, the kind of thing that I really enjoy, in the same sort of vein of like a Spotlight or The Report from last year. It's not quite as good as those two movies, but this one really has a sort of an added layer of emotion to it, because we really hear a lot from the victims' families and these people in the film. So there's a real emotional energy, along with the number crunching that goes on. Stanley Tucci is also in the film, almost playing kind of a similar kind of role to what he did in Spotlight. And Amy Ryan is also in the movie as well. She's also very good. This is a really strong strong film that is right up my alley.
Okay, and it's called Worth. All right, Steve, what do you think?
Yeah, the only thing I wanted to add to that is that what's interesting about the film is that it's kind of a dry film for a lot of it. It's a lot about numbers and a lot about, like, it's basically about people talking about accounting and. What's interesting, and that's the kind of guy Kenneth Feinberg was. That's why he's perfect for the job. But what's interesting is that he has to learn, and it happens with the film too, is it sort of chips away at that, and you have to chip away to get to the humanity of the situation and remember what happened. Like, you have to remember what these people are going through, and they're not only just the death of a loved one, but in such a strange and completely singular way that had never really been dealt with before. It's not like there's not some like big revelatory moment for Michael Keaton's character. It comes very slow, it's very gradual, and sometimes it hurts him in his quest to sort of make sure everyone is taken care of. It takes us a while to realize that he really does actually care about these people and wants to help them, and he's not just trying to treat them like facts and figures. So it's a heck of a ride. But I'm a big fan of movies that get like down to the nitty gritty and the detail and are a little dry when it comes to stuff like that. But it pays off in the end.
Okay, all right, guys, hang on.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Eric Childress, Steve Procopi are live at the Sundance Film Festival for 2020. That was a movie we were just talking about with Michael Keaton called Worth. And both recommended by both. All right. It's the Nick DeGilio Show on 720 WGN, and it continues. The Nick DeGilio Show continues here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio here till 4. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. They're rebooting Punk'd, and we're going to talk about some TV reboots that we didn't need. And 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Stay connected on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right now, we are being joined by Eric Childress and Steve Procopi. They are both at the Sundance Film Festival. Eric is here.
Hello.
Steve is here. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
Okay, Steve, where do you want to go next?
I want to talk about what is probably my favorite film of the festival so far. It's called Zola, and I'm not really sure how to describe this. It's a telling of a true story from 2015 that began life as a Twitter stream. Or a Twitter, like, what do you call it, thread, by this one woman who, I think she did this, it was something like 140-some tweets, but it became a magazine article, and then now this movie. And it's about this young black woman, I forget where it starts, but it ends up in Florida, and she makes friends with this other woman who's played by Riley Keough, and... Riley Keough's a sort of stripper, but there might be a little more or less to her, as it turns out. And she basically makes friends with her very quickly, and then whisks her away down to Florida to do some some dancing that where they are going to make all this money, and it just kind of, I don't want to say too much about it, but it just kind of, it turns out Riley Keough might not be completely honest about everything she's going to do in Florida or what she expects of her new friend, and all hell kind of breaks loose. There are a couple men on the trip with them, including a guy played by Coleman Domingo, who turns out is something of a pimp. And sometimes when he gets really angry, he adopts, like, accents, like African accents or Jamaican accents. I think it kind of changes from situation to situation, but it only happens when he gets really emotional. And it is a wild ride. It's been compared to things like Hustlers and Spring Break, although I don't really, maybe the energy is the same, but it's not, the story's kind of different, and I just think the attitude and the perspective of this one woman who is just not, who's very smart and not having it and not allowing herself to be manipulated, but at the same time she's kind of interested in where things are going because there might actually be money at the end of this nightmare. So it is just really raucous and fun and seedy, and man, it just never lets up. And there's a visual aesthetic too that makes it almost feel like, not that you're watching the movie on your phone, but there are like phone elements to the movie that are kind of funny, and I've never seen tried before in quite this way. So that I really enjoyed Zola.
Okay, Eric, do you see it?
Yeah, so with Steve, and I'm a little more on the fence about it. There's a lot of stuff I agree with Steve. I think the movie does have an energy. I like the movie more than Hustlers, but sort of less than Spring Breakers. I think Spring Breakers actually, along with its color and excess, I think I actually was kind of saying something. This one just seemed like a fun, weird story that they pulled off of Twitter that then, again, like, became this article and whatnot. And by the end of it, I was like, it didn't seem as fantastical that you needed to make a movie out of that. It seemed like we've seen movies that have adopted this very kind of situation before, and this one just happens to be fantastical because it was real life, I guess. But I think the two leads, Taylor Page, who plays Zola, is a wonderful newcomer. Riley Keough is very funny in the movie. The other guy on the trip, I don't know the actor's name, but he sort of plays the dumb boyfriend of Riley Keough's character, and he is totally doing Jason from The Good Place. People who are familiar with that show, he is. I mean, it is a straight up ripoff of that performance that distracted me the entire every time he spoke. But the movie is. I think people will find interest in the movie. I'm not recommending it. I'm not quite as wild about it as Steve was.
Okay. All right, and so that's called Zola. All right, and now are these? Do we know? You know, when some of these movies are going to be going to get like the general release?
Well, Zola is an A24 film. It's one of the films that they have brought to the festival. They don't have a release date on it yet. The Assistant is opening up in a couple of weeks, actually, from Bleecker Street. We don't know about the Ren and Stimpy film, and Worth has not been picked up yet, but I suspect that'll probably change sometime this week.
Yeah, well, I mean, you got a cast like that, you know.
Yes, yeah.
So, all right, Eric, where to next?
Well, let's go to another documentary that I know you're really going to enjoy, The Go-Go's.
Oh, yes.
What more really needs to be said? I mean, it's right there in the title. This is about famous, really kind of first, multi-successful all-girl band from the late 70s and then into their early 1980s. And it's a really pretty revealing documentary. I know there's been a Behind the Music about them before, which I remember watching a long time ago. This one runs an hour and a half, so it's a bit longer, and they get a little more detailed, stretching out this, particularly the beginning stuff, which I think is really interesting. Their sort of roots in punk rock and stuff before they kind of transitioned over into becoming more of a mainstream pop band, which rankled some of the members of the band, and it goes into all of the changes, people who left, the people who came in, and all of them are on camera doing interviews. Really candid stuff about the drug use that was going on at the time, the things that really rankled members of the band as far as money and fame and the personal stuff that was going on. And it's just a really fun documentary, even with some of the horrible stuff that was going on. Thankfully, they're all still here with us, so it's not no real complete tragedies in there. But by the end, they kind of put the point of it that it's almost like a plea to get the Go-Go's into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But that being said, for 90 minutes, it's just a really fun time revisiting this music and getting to see these women talk candidly about this really incredible time in their lives. Much more candid than I can say for the Taylor Swift documentary that's also playing here at Sundance. But the Go-Go's, which is going to be on Showtime sometime this year, is definitely worth up your alley.
Oh, it's great. I love the Go-Go's. All right, Steve, what do you think?
Yeah, it's a total blast. I mean, it's not just the music, but it doesn't pull any punches when it talks about all variety of bad behavior, including obviously the drugs and the infighting. Those stories are incredible, and to hear them tell those stories now and kind of admit whose fault some of those things were. I mean, Belinda Carlisle comes right out and says, I had a big ego at that right then, and a lot of that was my fault. So, but to think like that this, like the first all female band that played all their own instruments and were.
We go out, Steve, again.
Oh, jeez. Can you hear me?
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, no, they're saying that they had all these things, and they had their first album be number one, and that's never happened. It had not happened. They're the first one, and they're not in the Hall of Fame. It's ridiculous. And it's really sweet to watch how they all kind of came back together.
Yeah.
Too. That's really a very moving thing. So, yeah, it's a really fun documentary.
Okay, great. Eric and Steve, hang on, and we will continue live from the Sundance Film Festival here as we continue, and the news is coming up. And the Nick DiGilio show carries on. It's the Nick DiGilio here show, and we are in the Skyline studio on 720 WGN. Tom Hush is the producer. I am your host, and we are speaking with Eric Childress and Steve Procopi, who are both at the Sundance Film Festival. We're getting exclusive looks at some of the movies that they are seeing at the festival that hopefully we will be seeing in the coming weeks and months. So Eric is here, and Steve is here. All right.
Thank you.
All right. Let's start with Eric. Where do you want to go next?
Where do we want to go next? A movie called Black Bear.
Okay.
This movie, as far as Aubrey Plaza as an actress turned filmmaker who's going off to this sort of a cabin by the lake to sort of work on her new project. Also staying there is a guy played by Christopher Abbott, who's sort of like best described as sort of like the caretaker of the area, and his girlfriend, played by Sarah Gaydon. They have kind of a rocky relationship. There's a lot of jealousy, a lot of personal things between them, and the introduction to Aubrey Plaza into this world of theirs kind of shakes things up a bit. But that's really all you kind of want to know about where the story is headed, because it really starts to turn into a whole idea about where we sort of derive art from, and it becomes a kind of a whole take on, is art imitating life or is life imitating art? And it's one of these movies that we've been seeing a lot of lately that sort of like divides into two halves, and where the second half begins to sort of contradict and make you question things that you had seen in the first half of the film. And I thought the film is quite successful in the themes that it's exploring. And Aubrey Plaza gives a performance that I think might be the best of her career, certainly her film career. It's a really intense performance. Still has a bit of that Aubrey Plaza the bite that she brings to a lot of her comedic work, but really strong dramatic work from her in this. And both Abbott and Gaydon are also really good. So yeah, this is one of the films that stood out for me so far this fest.
Okay, that's Black Bear. All right, Steve, what did you think?
Yeah, no, I pretty much the same exact thing. I was impressed by this.
Still having trouble with Steve's phone.
Oh, it's tough to, like, the perspective changes. And can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay, the perspective of the film changes, and a lot of things.
Well, now we're losing him again. Hold on, let me put Steve on hold again. Hold on. We're just losing Steve. I don't know what's going on. does Black Bear, have they talked about whether it's going to get released or when? Or
No one's picked it up just yet. It's a tough sell, for certain. It's one of those movies that really likes to mess with audiences' minds and stuff, and, you know, a lot of audiences are not open to that sort of thing. It's also a very intense film, and, you know, not always going to be everyone's cup of tea, particularly where it goes in the second half. So I think you'll probably find some specialty division, maybe like IFC or maybe Magnolia, pick this one up.
Okay. All right, so that's called Black Bear. I'm always intrigued by Aubrey Plaza.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's great. I mean, obviously she's very funny, and but I think there's a lot more going on with her than just like the straight up comedy stuff that she does.
Yeah, and there's really a lot to sort of unpack, particularly when you sort of dig into who made the film. And also Aubrey Plaza, the fact that she's also been married to a filmmaker, or not married, but been going out with a filmmaker for several years now, too. So there's a lot of sort of interesting personal things that you might be able to pull out of this film.
Okay. Steve is back. We got you back, Steve?
Okay, hopefully, yes. Yeah. I'll say this about Aubrey Plaza. She pulls off an emotional breakdown scene in this that I don't think I'm going to see anything like it from her or anybody else for a while. And I'm including people like Elizabeth Moss in this, who I feel like I see do an emotional breakdown scene in every movie. But she is just buries herself into this one sequence. And I was uncomfortable watching it, to be honest. But it's she's so good. She's the reason to see it. But the movie's really fascinating, too, just by its shifting perspectives and it's something. I don't know if it's for everybody, and I'm not sure everyone's even going to get it. But just as a way to see how art influences life and vice versa, it's pretty compelling stuff.
Okay, all right, and it's Nick DiGilio's show here on WGN, continuing on, and we are talking with Eric and Steve live from the Sundance Film Festival. Okay, Steve, where do you want to go next?
I want to go with something that is opening in mid-April called Promising Young Woman. You may have seen the trailer, and it's about a 30-year-old woman named Cassie, who's played by Carey Mulligan, who used to be in medical school and dropped out when something really horrible happened. And when we meet her, she is meeting random men in bars and pretending to be drunk. And when they take them back to their place and they start to do things that are completely inappropriate, she reveals that she is very sober and gets very threatening, and that's all I'm going to say about what she does with them. But what's interesting about the story is that a couple of things get very specific, and she decides to take very specific revenge on the people that that did this mystery thing to her in medical school. But she also meets apparently like a really nice guy that she knew in medical school, who's played by Bo Burnham, who is a real shocker in this, which seems surprising because he's very famous, but I don't think we've ever seen him quite like this in a romantic lead role. The movie is sometimes very funny in a very dark way. It's very sweet sometimes, but then it gets truly ugly, and I don't think it sticks the landing, but I thought it was really compelling and provocative. It's going to divide people without a doubt. I think in some ways you can predict who's going to really like it and who's not going to really like it. But at the same time, it's just so it takes a lot of chances. It's directed by a first time director named Emerald Fennell, she's a British actress, but I think most people probably know her work because she's written a lot of the episodes of Killing Eve. So, I found it really, Carey Mulligan obviously is tremendous. Bo Burnham's a real, in a weird way, a weird discovery in this role. And I think it takes some really sort of surprising turns in places. I'm not going to say too much about that, but I think it's going to be an audience pleaser to a certain degree, but it might also cause riots in the theater. So maybe not. But okay. Yeah, I really value it.
That's a promising young woman. What do you think, Eric?
Yeah, this is where Steve and I depart. I also don't think the film sticks the landing, but I also don't think it sticks a lot of the dramatic entry points that eventually lead up to it. Mulligan, obviously, she's always good, and she is here too. I think the scenes with Bo Burnham are really good, but they almost feel like they're in a different movie. There's a turn about two-thirds through the way of this movie that anyone who's seen any rom-com in their life, or any movie for that matter, can see coming miles away. And I think that, Steve mentioned that the writer, director of this movie, wrote a lot of episodes of Killing Eve, and I think that tone shifts over to this movie, and I think that's one of the problems with it. The Carey Mulligan character is not entirely unlike the Jodie Comer character from that television show, in many respects, and I think that the shifting tone of the movie, and I think that some of the direction that the film eventually takes just doesn't quite add up. The movie that the more I thought about this throughout the day today, through last night, the movie reminded me a lot of was Falling Down. But I think that movie has a much greater sort of psychological turn in it, where the audience is really on board with what the main character is doing very early on, only to see the sort of the veneer of that kind of crackle later on, as sort of the mental state of that character is revealed a bit more. So, yeah, the more I think about this movie, the less I like it.
Okay. I see that Molly Molly Shannon's in the cast.
Yeah, she has one scene in the movie.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. All right, Eric, where do you want to go next?
Well, let's talk about a son of a director that you very much enjoy.
Okay,
Brandon.
You know what? Eric, hang on a second. Hang on.
Okay.
Eric, Steve, we are continuing here. We're live from the Sundance Film Festival, and we will continue here on 720 WGN. The Nick DiGilio Show continues here on 720 WGN. It is a Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we are going to talk about Punk'd. It's getting a reboot and TV reboots that we didn't need. 312-981-7200 is the number. And we are talking with Steve Procopi and Eric Childress, who are both at the Sundance Film Festival, getting an exclusive look at some of the movies that they're seeing. Let's get them back. All right, Eric, you were going to say you were going to start talking about a movie. I wanted to make sure we got it all in.
Yes, absolutely. The next couple we're going to talk about are ones that each of us saw individually. So okay. A couple horror-ish films that we saw. One of them is directed by Brandon Cronenberg, the son of David Cronenberg. Mm. His latest film is called Possessor. And it stars Andrea Riseborough as a woman who is more or less an assassin, or is used as an assassin. At some point, not quite specified in the future, where some corporation or whatever can take someone, put them into the body of a host, put their consciousness and their memories into the body of a host, and use that person as an assassin. And then kill that person off, kill the host off, and then they, obviously there are no links to the actual crime. Jennifer Jason Leigh plays the head of the corporation, or at least the head doctor of the corporation. The movie follows Riseborough through a couple different jobs. We see one at the beginning, but there's a more specific one lit throughout the movie involving kind of a mobster or a really bad lawyer played by Sean Bean. And she inhabits the body of, once again, Christopher Abbott. To pull off this job and then becomes this kind of mind deal where they can't quite pull her out of the body at the time that they need to get her out. So it's sort of this shifting consciousness she starts going through, remaining in the Christopher Abbott host. Brandon Cronenberg, no doubt, is a chip off the old block. When it comes to, he's certainly watched a lot of his dad's movies. And this one is absolutely no exception. There is some really strong visuals in this film, particularly some of the mind stuff as we go into their minds and whatnot. And there's also some very creative bloodletting in this film, some really nasty stuff that happens during this movie. But that only makes up probably about 15, 20 minutes total of the entire movie, which is about an hour and a half, I think leaves a lot of stuff on the table as far as the ideas that is going through. And without really sort of commenting on all these things that are just sitting right there for the plucking, the movie kind of comes off as sort of like half-baked ideas that were sort of left over from not just Inception, but specifically Existence. As well, this movie borrows a lot of stuff from Existence, and that film had, I think, had a lot more going on than this one does. And also the fact that the stuff in between the really horrific stuff that happens in it is quite dull, quite dramatically dull. And it's also never a good sign when your film's sort of shocking ending elicits laughs from the audience that paid to see it. So. There's really strong stuff in the movie, but I can't really quite recommend Possessor.
Okay. All right. And Steve, you didn't see that one, right?
I did not. Okay. No. Well, I'm very upset about that because from what I heard, it was worth seeing whether it was good or not. But anyway, but the one that I want to talk about is one called The Night House, and it's about a teacher played by Rebecca Hall, who we find out right at the top is just getting home from her husband's funeral. He had killed himself while they were at their house, and he went out on a little boat in their lake and shot himself and left a very weird note. And so she's stuck in this big, beautiful house by herself, and she starts to, during the night, she starts to think that his ghost is coming back to visit her, and she starts having these visions, both when she's awake and when she's asleep, that confuse us a little bit. But man, the scares in this movie are proper. They are like just hitting us hard. They had the audience in this screening was so on edge every time it got to become night again that it was a little freaky. It's a very deep, dark psychological drama. As well as a horror film, and as the plot goes on and we start to realize exactly what this is that is coming to visit her and why her husband might have killed himself and the different things he was dealing with when he died, it gets a little more convoluted than it probably needed to, but I thought I knew where it was going, and it surprised me where it actually ended up. Which is always a bonus. I always give an extra half a star for taking me somewhere I wasn't expecting. And Rebecca Hall plays this widow, and she's terrific in it, as she is in most things. But yeah, this thing, just in terms of pure, some of them are jump scares, but they are so solid, and they're not just like jump scares from the music in the film. They're stuff that's happening in the scene. And that alone allows me to recommend it wholeheartedly. So yeah, it's called The Night House. I have no idea who has it or when it's coming, but keep an eye out for it.
Okay, and the guy who directed it directed The Signal.
He did. He did The Signal. He was one of the original VHS contributors. He's done a lot of anthology stuff. But he also did there was one before. His most recent film is something...
Ritual.
Yeah, The Ritual, so which I remember liking. So, anyway.
Okay. All right. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio. And all right, so what are you looking forward to?
Well, I'm looking for the very next thing some of us are seeing, and certainly that I'm seeing, is a movie called Palm Springs. And it's apparently... a kind of a Groundhog Day riff with Adam Sandberg and Kristen Milioti in it. And there was some really strong buzz about it from last night, so I'm really looking forward to that one.
Okay, what about you, Steve? Anything in particular that you're looking forward to?
On my last day there, I'm seeing back-to-back, I'm seeing the new film from Dee Reeves called The Last Thing He Wanted. This is the woman that did Mudbound a few years ago. This is her new movie. And then right after that, Jeff Baena, his new movie, Horse Girl. Jeff Baena is the guy that did The Little Hours a couple years ago. This one stars Alison Brie, the trailer just came out, and it looks really, really weird, and I thought it was going to be more of a comedy, but it looks more of like something very strange and maybe UFO-oriented, so those are my two of my last films are the ones I'm most looking forward to.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you guys for your report. By the way, Steve, we don't really need to talk much about The Gentleman.
Oh, you didn't like it?
I'm not a big Guy Ritchie guy.
I'm not either, but I like those first two movies, and this is so in that, like, I was mostly on board with it.
Yeah,
so.
No, it's if you're a fan of the those first couple of Guy Ritchie movies, this is definitely a throwback to that. There's no question about it. And it's got a great cast. So
it really does. Yeah. Like it's
Okay.
I laughed a lot. I thought it was funny and smart, and McConaughey is great in it. So.
Yeah, McConaughey's awesome in it. now, there was did you guys see a movie called Shirley with Elizabeth Moss?
Yeah. Oh, we did, right. We forgot to talk about that.
And was it not good?
No. It's a movie, it's a really miserable experience. I mean, in terms of, the subject matter and whatnot, it's just not a pleasant film to watch, kind of aggressively so, too.
Is she good in it, though?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
She and Michael Stuhlbarger are really good in it.
Oh wow!
But as I said to Eric, because they play husband and wife. I mean, she plays Shirley Jackson, the writer. Eric, we came out. I said it's a movie about miserable people doing miserable things to each other just because they can. If you're into that, like Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf sort of vibe, then maybe you'll dig it. But
okay.
That's about as close as it gets to something great, yeah.
Okay. All right. So when do you guys get back, Eric?
We get back Wednesday night. We're all on the same flight.
Okay, cool. All right, well, have fun. Enjoy the movies, and thank you guys for giving us a report.
Of course.
There you go. There's Eric Childress and Steve Procopi, and they are in at the Sundance Film Festival and gave us an exclusive look at some of the stuff. All right, we thank them. The Nick DiGilio Show moves on right here on 720 WGN.